This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy.
We are live. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Ask Jason Show. I am joined by Megan. Megan, say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
So I feel like I'm talking to like my kids. Say hi. Yeah. Say hi to all the beautiful like people out there. Say hi to all the people out there. Come on. Wave hello, Megan. As usual, the show is talking business, marketing, life, whatever you need to in order to get to the next level. We field questions. Megan's in there looking at all the questions and making sure you get asked. So if there's anything on your mind, anything you want to talk about, put it in the comments below. And Megan goes through it and we pick the questions and we answer it. Hence the Ask Jason Show and hence the live part and the Q&A part. So pretty self-explanatory at this point. We are here every Monday. So let's jump into it. Megan, what you got?
Okay. This first question is from Tiffany. Is using a VA service worth it? And what can I even use virtual assistants for?
I mean, so depends what you're looking to do. What can you use VAs for? Almost every single part of your business. So I think one of the easiest things to do is you look at your where you're getting stuck or what's holding you back in your business, where the bottleneck is. And I think the immediate response from most people is, okay, cool. I'm going to go hire someone internally. I'm going to go bring them in. I'm going to pay them a big salary. When in reality, you could probably get away with even hiring like a few VAs to take some stuff off your plate, whether it's email responding to, email management, whether it's administrative tasks, whether it's small bookkeeping, whether it's video editing or content or posting on your social media for you. So whatever you think you're being held back in, you don't have to go hire that for that position alone because you may just be starting off. You may not be able to afford it. I know agencies, we're not like this. We're not VAs in this regard, but I know agencies that run, their ads are VAs, the media buyers are VAs. And then they have like a head of media buying who's local, for example, and they oversee the, anything that you could probably systemize and automate or delegate, you could probably get a VA to do it. And now with AI, things are just becoming a lot easier to do those things. So, a VA is really just there to offload it so that you're spending less time working in the business and more time working on the business. Megan, is there anything you want to add to this? Because I know you deal with our VAs.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with all of that. You can even, I don't know that if you mentioned like creating social media content, I think they could even help with that or graphics, design, anything like that as well. This next question is from Chris. How long does it take to see whether an ad campaign is effective or not?
Another loaded depending question, right? So it depends. In e-commerce, we like to, for a campaign, we probably want to see around 5x the CPA. So your cost per acquisition. So if you spend $50 to acquire a customer, probably going to see $250 in ad spend minimum, before you shut the whole campaign off. From an ad set, it's probably maybe a little bit less, maybe it's like 3x. Ads, you could kind of look at it by other metrics. Some people look at it by impressions. So did it get around 8 to 10,000 impressions? Has it generated anything? No, cool. Are the click-through metrics good? Is the ad doing its part and getting people there? No. Then you kill the ad. So it's always before you pause the campaign. It's always pause the ad set, pause the campaign.
Okay.
We rarely pause campaigns like as a whole, because chances are it's either the creative's not working or our targeting is off or the people we're putting in front of isn't working. So it's either one of those things first. So, really, it comes down to just spending enough in order to get the data to confidently make that decision.
Can you please explain what A/B testing is and why it's important? And this is from Marissa.
Sure. So A/B testing is really just putting one thing up against another, right? A versus B. So if you have a website, you have your website, and then if you want to test changes to it, like instead of saying add to cart, you could write, give me the handbag, or yes, I want this, mm-hmm. for example. And you just want to test which one has a better click. Are people clicking add to cart, or are people, you know, attracted more to that language and they actually click the add to cart button, or the get me, or yes, I want this bag button. So you play around with that. So what you do is you A-B test it. You have one versus the other, and you split the traffic that's coming to that page. So half the traffic will see the add to cart and half the traffic will see the other one. You could do that with headlines. You could do that with, you know, product descriptions. You could do that with almost any part of the of a website. Now, the issue is a couple of things. So that explains what A-B split testing is and why it's so important, is because you want the best chance at getting a conversion. So sometimes you'll have a good headline and you'll think it's good, but it doesn't really get people to go to the next step. But if you switch the headline, maybe that's more attractive and gets people to go. So you want to like test one against the other. So, and then you get the data and you make that decision. Now that becomes the baseline. And now you split test against another. You always want to keep split testing or to get better, because you always want to improve your conversion rate on your site. Now, where people make the mistake is, one, they test too many things at once. And if you have way too many variables, it gets hard. Number two is they want to split test without getting any traffic to their site. So you don't have traffic coming to the site. It's very hard to split test, because you need enough people coming through where you have statistical relevance. So there's enough people coming in where the data pool's not like, three people clicked on this, let's make our change, and no one clicked on the other one because we only had five people come to the site, right? You don't want to do that. So you want enough traffic where the focus group is big enough. Mm-hmm. So make sure you have traffic, make sure you're only testing a couple of things at once, and then always keep changing the control group. And so the control group is, what I mean by that is, if B wins, B becomes the new A, and now test it against something else. So you always want to keep going up. And the other part is, like, have a goal in mind, right? Split testing the add to cart button, as an example, will mean nothing if that's not where the problem with the conversion is. So always, you know, there's tools like Hotjar, for example, that watch people that come to your site. It records visitors to your site. And you could go through it and you could watch, where did they bounce? How far did they scroll? You could see a heat map on the page of how far did they get, where'd they go? And you could do that for any page on your website. So once you see that people are dropping off there, that would be the indicator of where to split test from there.
Should you only test two things at a time, or can you test multiple?
Even then, I mean, I would test one thing at a time. I would just test like changing one thing at a time, because otherwise, again, the more things you test, the more variations you create. The more variations you create, the more traffic you need, and the more variations you have, the harder it is to find statistical relevance. So if you if you A/B split test your homepage and A/B split test your add to cart, was it the homepage that got them to click the add to cart button better, or was it because you had a different add to cart button? So you want to keep everything the same and outline only the things you're trying to test.
How long should you test for? Like, what's an efficient amount of time?
Is Chris following up with you live, or are these Megan questions?
These are Megan questions.
It's a good question. It's traffic oriented until you have a clear winner. So if you're sending like 10,000 people to a site, for example, and one is overwhelming, like 65% plus or 70% plus for one side or the other, make the change. If it's split too evenly, it's not enough to make a difference. You want a clear winner.
This question is from Tony. How important is my website for my e-com store? Is it better to have a basic 2-3 page website, or a site with a ton of details, testimonials, videos, etc.?
Hey, Jason here. I hate to interrupt this episode. You're probably enjoying it so much right now, and thank you for paying attention to it and tuning into this episode. Look, the truth is, I really need a favor from you. We really want to keep getting this in the hands of more and more people. So if you could do me a favor and head on over and leave a 5-star review, leave us a review, leave us some comments, share it with friends, spread the love. It would mean the world to me. As well, continue the conversation with me on Instagram at Jason Portnoy. Follow along there. Look forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much. Now let's get back to the episode.
I think the more stuff you could have on a site, the better, as long as it's clean and neat, right? So every single one of those things can be done on 2 to 3 pages and make it very messy, or they can be done on longer pages. And, you know, there's just a testament, there's reviews at the bottom and you click through and you could read all the reviews. They're separate. So all those things are important. So I wouldn't sit there and say that's a big change in a website. You should have testimony. You should have reviews on your website. So yeah, I'd probably create a good website, and then I'd create different landing pages to best-selling products if your conversion rate's bad, or if you want to split test.
So details and everything are good. Just keep it clean and organized.
Yes, people splash their details all over their homepage, and then it's like I can't read this, and then they mm-hmm. wonder why the bounce rate is so high.
Okay. What do you feel is the hardest part of being a business coach, and what is the easiest part? And that's my question this week.
That's a good one. What do you want first, the easiest part or the hardest part?
How about the hardest part?
The hardest part is sometimes you can want it more than the client wants it for themselves. And when you get to that point, that's a very bad place to be as a coach. Like you, as a coach, as a consultant, you can't want it more than the client wants it for themselves. So you could give them all the tools. They could come in, and if they're not going to take advantage of it, or they're not going to come in and show up or do the work, that's the hardest part, because then you start taking it personally. Like, right, are they not getting results because of your coaching? Are they not getting results because of this or that? And then it leaves a whole sour experience across the board. So the hardest part is sometimes we bring on clients who ask questions and they want something. They like, what, that's why they hired you in the first place. They mm-hmm. want something. And then I think sometimes they think they're going to hire a coach or join a course or do that, and it's a magic bullet. Oh, mm-hmm. he'll just tell me the exact thing I need. I'm going to go implement that one thing and go do it. I'll tell you a quick story. I always relate it back to when I was a kid. I loved magic. I love magic tricks. And it's funny, because even on my honeymoon, we went to Hawaii, and on the way home, we stopped off in Vegas for the weekend, and we passed this magic store, and I bought probably $150 worth of magic tricks and card tricks and DVDs and everything like that. And my wife was like, "What are you doing? You're never going to watch this. You're never going to do it." And I think when I came home, I like made it a mission. Like every night I was going to watch that DVD in front of her to show her. I never did any of those tricks. And I think I watched that DVD for 2 days. Giant waste of money. She was right, as usual. I don't even know where those DVDs are right now. But yeah, so I bought, I'm a sucker for that. Like, you show me like magic trick stuff, like I'm in. I want to learn it. The problem is when you're young and you walk into a magic store and you're going to buy like how to, I'll give you a perfect example. This was a trick, how to take someone's ring, make it disappear, and show up on your shoelaces tied in a knot.
Oh, okay.
Really cool.
Did you do that?
Really
Did you
cool
figure
trick.
That out?
Listen, really, 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 really cool trick. Like, you watch the video of that, you see like Chris Angel and people like that do that trick, and you're like, wow, this is incredible. You buy the trick, and then you realize, okay, I got to bring the pants to the drawer. It's a spoiler for everyone out here. I got to bring the pants to somebody who could sew a line in it and into it properly. That could run a line down from the pocket all the way down to the shoe. I need to, it's magnetic shoelaces that need to go on. So I have to have another piece on my shoes that if when it falls down, it looks like it's on there. So you got to do like these alterations, and you got to do all those things, but never mind that. So once you do the alterations of the pants, once you make special pants, because you can't just put on any pants now, right? So now if I did that trick 10 times, it'd be like, why is Jason always wearing his like dress pants?
Yeah.
Trick, right? But like, once you do that, you still have to practice like sleight of hand. You got to practice from a mirror, like all these tricks. Like, I used to know how to do a trick where you take a quarter, smack it into a Coke can, and you open the Coke can and the quarter's inside. Mm. Right. Mm. I spent literally, no one's going to want to work with us anymore after I tell these stories.
Interested. How did these tricks work?
I spent literally hours in front of a mirror practicing it, because there's a bunch of misdirection and sleight of hand and movement that needs to be done. So you can't just come out and do it. But I think when you're a kid, you walk in and you're like, hey, I'm going to buy this, and then I'm going to snap my fingers, and I now could do magic. mm-hmm. that there's work involved, that there's mm-hmm. a practice to what you're going to do. So you have someone mm-hmm. showing you how to do the trick doesn't mean you could actually go back and do the trick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I always found with coaching.
Yeah.
Was that I will show you how to do the trick, but these people come thinking that there's no work involved and they're just going to come and be a magician.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just show me how to do it. Here's the blueprint. Go do it. And then like, oh man, this is work. You mean I got to practice this trick? I got to run it. I got to make alterations. I got to really like make sure I'm standing in the right spot. I got to do all these things. I got to focus on all. Yeah, man, it's work. So I think that's the hardest part. And I think it's like that expectation that goes on in someone's mind. The easiest part of being a business coach is that I don't have to do the work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just have to point them in the right direction versus our agency. When we're done for you, we're responsible for not just the strategy. We're responsible for getting signed off on the strategy. We're responsible for doing the work for them. We're responsible for doing all those things. And it all falls on us. To an extent, right? We're partners. People have to do their job as well also. But I think that's the easiest part is, cool, you ask me the question, I will give you the exact playbook, but now you have to go do it. And that's where my job ends. But the hardest part is cutting that part off, of being like, that's where my job ends. And then, you know, making sure you actually go do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that makes sense. Now, apparently, yeah, the magic tricks. How do you get the ring off the person's finger, though?
No, they have to.
Oh, that's supposed to work.
You have to give you the ring.
Oh, they give you the ring.
Yeah, they give you the ring.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I found one of the tricks. What was it? Actually, this Saturday, I found one of the tricks, and I was doing it in the kitchen, and you had to see my kids were like, "What? What?"
Yeah.
And then even my wife was like looking at it. She's like, "I know how you did that. You hit it over here." I'm like, "No." And she's like, checks and not there. She goes, "Do it again." She's like trying to watch for like every little thing. And I'm like, "I've been doing this trick since I was probably like 15 years old. You're not gonna figure it out right now. I may be rusty, yeah. but I'm not that rusty where you won't get it." And then the kids were like, "Oh, I could do that." And they started putting water in their hand, and then it was like making a mess everywhere, and they're like, "How come my wine's not disappearing? Oh, can you make it disappear? Can you make it come out of my like?" So it was cute. I found one of the props. So yeah, magic.
New
is
Chris Angel.
I love magic.
New Chris Angel.
Oh yeah, there was a worry in my house for a while that they're like, poor kid's gonna grow up to amount to nothing, like one of those struggling magicians on the street, like, or like one of the ones that do like bar mitzvahs and weddings and like shows up there. And, like, let's hire that Jason, the incredible, magnificent Jason. Right. That's what they thought I was amounting to. But so, yeah.
It's hilarious.
All right. Well, until next week, if you have any questions, put them in the comments. Let us know you're watching the replay. It means a lot to us that you tune in and watch this. If you have any questions, we'll address them on next week, every Monday. See you later.
All right.
Hey everyone, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Thank you for your attention. And if you made it this far, you're clearly somebody who wants to take their business to the next level. You want to get better. And I understand that being an entrepreneur sometimes can feel like a little bit of a lonely journey, which is why being part of a thriving community of like-minded people is just so important. It was super helpful in my own development as well. And as is the ability to instantly get answers to the questions you may have in order to grow and scale your business. It's for that reason why I launched a consulting coaching program called the Market Domination Method. And guess what? If you're listening to this and you hear this, we're open for applications right now for new members to join. So to request an invitation or to book a free diagnostic call, call it a game plan call. I'll literally sit with you and demonstrate the value that we could bring to your business on that call. Let's jump on a call. We'll discuss ways you could possibly grow your business. Head on over to jportnoy.com, jportnoy.com. You'll find all the different ways you could work together. It's going to be the best business decision you'll make. So hope to speak soon. Head on over to jportnoy.com, book that free game plan call, and I look forward to talking to you soon.